Spotlight.
This is Akashvani. In the program Spotlight, now we bring you a discussion on Niti Aayog Investment Friendliness Index 2026, Enhancing Competitive Federalism and Investment Across States. The participants are Shubhamoy Bhattacharji, Economic Analyst, and Nishit Kumar, Anchor.
During the 9th Governing Council meeting of Niti Aayog, Prime Minister Modi tasked Niti Aayog with preparing an investment-friendly charter comprising key policies, programs, and processes required to attract investment. Subsequently, Niti Aayog released a report titled Investment Friendliness Index, which presents a structured and data-driven framework for assessing how effectively states and union territories create, enable, and sustain an environment conducive to investment. And to discuss more about it, we are privileged to have been joined in by Shubhamoy Bhattacharji, Economic Analyst. Welcome, Shubhamoy, to the show.
Happy to be here, Nishit.
Shubhamoy, first of all, we would like to understand what this Investment Friendliness Index is all about and how does it work?
Well, you know, the Investment in Friendliness Index builds on earlier work that has been done by Niti Aayog. For the past quite a few years, the Niti Aayog has been looking at how the states perform. So there are so many ways in which Niti Aayog has researched on this, and one must offer commendation to Niti Aayog that they had done this thing. So one of the most celebrated ones in this context was the ease of doing business, which was released and has been released in subsequent years. In fact, it has become like almost like an annual document which Niti Aayog releases. In addition, Niti Aayog has also been looking at backward districts, and it comes out with what is called the most, in fact, the word that they use now are the most promising districts. I think they don't use the word backward district anymore, which is fair enough. And then they also look at state level interventions in different sectors. Not only that, the Niti Aayog has also looked at sector level interventions that has been done at different levels and by the states themselves. So together, it's an impressive body of work, and these will be looking at the capacity of the states to attract investment to their corner. So essentially, what the Investment Friendliness Index does is exactly what it says, that how comfortable do investors feel when they land up in a particular state to do business, or even before that, when an investor hears about a particular state, is it with trepidation, scare, or is it with enjoyment, with a feeling that yes, this is a place where I can do business, where I can bring in more possibilities, and so on and so on. And that is what Investment Friendliness Index seeks to see and measure, so that the investors have a ready reckoner with them about what is working and in which states and to what extent.
You put forward a very interesting thing of ready reckoner for the investors. So, Shubhamoy, if I ask you, to what extent does the Investment Friendliness Index successfully capture the ground reality of doing business, given that it relies mostly on a combination of secondary data and investment perception surveys?
Well, you know what, as I said, Niti Aayog is not new to this game. Niti Aayog has been looking at it very closely at how the states work. So while the data may be called secondary, it was not necessary this time for Niti Aayog to have gone out to the states to have asked for data. In fact, I would welcome Akashvani listeners to look at the Niti Aayog website and to see how the ease of doing business of the states has actually been constructed by the Niti Aayog. And that is a voluminous exercise. That's a very robust exercise, and that's a very useful exercise that has been done over the years. And it's very granular. And in that, the Niti Aayog has actually gone ahead and has interacted with each state government, visiting them, getting data from them, making out questionnaires, getting answers to those, and checking and rechecking those to come up with very, very detailed analysis and estimate of what laws are working, which rules are working, which rules are not working. For instance, it has looked at the ability of the states in terms of labor laws, that where do the states rank and how do the states rank in terms of labor laws. Similarly, it has done for others. It has done for electricity. It has done for energy. It has done for several other sectors. So there is a considerable amount of detailed primary data that is available with the Niti Aayog, which it has brought to bear on the investment friendliness index. So there was actually no need, and rightly so, for Niti Aayog to develop a fresh set of primary data. Instead, it has already got a series of very well-crafted, robust data, which it has brought to bear on developing this particular index.
Shubham, how can this investment friendliness index effectively foster healthy competition among states without encouraging a race to the bottom, where states might offer unsustainable fiscal incentives at the cost of labor or even environmental standards?
Well, you know, you're right. Let's look at it this way. First of all, as you rightly pointed out, an index is obviously an encouragement to whoever is there in the index to show that I'm better than somebody else. I'm, you know, at the top of the index, or right, at least I'm in the top league. So definitely the challenge is there. States could feel so. However, let's look at what is it that the states can offer. And that's very interesting. So in terms of, if you look at the, in terms of the fiscal possibilities, the fiscal possibilities across states have largely been made similar. That's a very major achievement. Indirect tax front, all the states now work through GST, the goods and services tax. The goods and services tax is a very good tax, which actually helps the states stay on an even keel. So any tax that is levied on a product or on a service in any state is comparable across states. So there is therefore no chance of giving any extra additional benefit through the means of indirect taxes. If you look at direct taxes, which are income tax, corporation tax, well, there those taxes are levied by the center. So the states have no chance to do anything there. They get the taxes as a share of their profitability. Now, you can see that the states, if they want to keep a healthy balance sheet, they have to ensure that more industries stay within their geographical limits, because income tax or direct or corporate tax will come in typically from industries and from people who are working in those states. Now, if the state therefore tries to be funny and tries to, you know, create unsustainable tax environment, then they will see a fleeing of capital from the state. So that automatically, so while the state will be, actually will be giving out incentives, it will lose out because the kitty of the direct tax and corporation tax which they raise will come down. So it's a loss-making situation for them. They don't earn. What they try to gain from one side, they lose out on the other side. So it can be a double whammy, because they, while they're giving out incentives, the fiscal profligacy can actually be very dangerous for the states. So that's as far as the taxes are concerned. Now, about other measures. So what does that mean? The state, therefore, has to look at policy measures. Now, policy measures are an important thing. What are the policies that a state can bring to bear? States have a lot that they can do. States, after all, any enterprise that is, that sets up business in any state will require four things: land, labor, capital, and enterprise. And as you know, in India, a large part of our enterprise is self-employment. By self-employment, we mean small and micro enterprises. Out of the 64 million enterprises, about 60 million are micro enterprises. Micro enterprise essentially means just one person. Now, for that person, for those 60 million to be able to operate, it is essential that the states offer them opportunities at the cities. It is not possible for a micro enterprise to operate at a village level, to operate at a isolated hamlet. They'll hardly have any customers. But there is a tremendous possibility for these micro enterprises to operate in cities. So here becomes comes the state's responsibility. It, there's no point trying to offer cash to micro enterprises, because that's not the problem. Their problem is in terms of marketing linkage. Their problem is in terms of getting the raw materials. Their problem is in terms of getting the labor. In all these three things, the states can do a hell of a lot by creating advantage or opportunities of, for instance, land, allowing the micro enterprise to operate safely from clusters near where the consumers stay, which means very major reform in land practices and rules and laws. That is something that the states need to do. And unfortunately, very few states, despite the prodding by the central government, have done that sort of a work. Those which have done it are reaping the rewards. But there are a lot of states which have actually not done it. One of the reasons why we have tremendous amount of interstate migration is because of the fact that the states which are blessed with surplus labor do not know how to use the surplus labor by giving them opportunities to set up businesses where they can profit from. That's one. The next phase is labor. How does labor come to an enterprise? A labor can come to an enterprise only if the labor is skilled. Now, an enterprise, a micro enterprise, cannot have a skilled labor without, I mean, cannot train a skilled labor. it needs the support of the state government. So here comes a very big responsibility of the state to create the skilling apparatus to be able to allow millions of workers to be trained in the right trades to be able to take advantage of that labor pool. So that's a very, very major work that the states have to do. So Investor Friendliness Index will and does measure how much of effort the states are putting in terms of giving the support to the enterprises, to the micro enterprises especially, to be able to get their work done. The third is electricity reforms. Very few states have actually moved on electricity reforms. It has been on and off. The states which have done so have reaped the benefit. The states which have not done so are creating problems for everybody. No enterprise today in the world, and India is no exception, can work without electricity. But like availability of electricity is such a complicated thing in so many places in terms of rules, laws, restrictions, that it becomes very difficult for micro enterprises to be able to access electricity at a competitive price to be able to sell their products competitively. The fourth comes the question of environment. Environment, not only of, as we commonly understand, environment of environmental safeguards, but the environment of taking risk. Again, small enterprises need a large amount of support from the state to be able to do their business safely. How easy is it to commute between two cities in India, in those states? How easy is it for the people to take their products and keep it somewhere where they can come back to and again restart their business the next day? These are very major environmental questions. When those people are working, they have their families. Do those families get the protection that the state should provide? These are some very fundamental questions, which I'm very happy to know that some of the states have actually started looking at very aggressively in terms of providing facilities. The PM Swanidhi scheme is one of those schemes which has actually been remarkable success, precisely because it has understood these challenges and have helped out the cart, the vendors and others to be able to do their business effectively. The small, very, very micro enterprises. But we need more such at the state level. So states have to be able to provide those sort of circumstances to be able to make the business climate useful. And fourth, of course, finally comes along the issue of making the bureaucracy less invasive, giving the business persons the space to develop their business without having to fill up n number of rules and forms. That is a very, very major challenge, because what it does is it makes even the big business annoyed, because they themselves have to put up huge departments to be able to satisfy those sort of things. And simultaneously, they are challenged by the number of rules and regulations that come along to not only for the big business, but also for the small business to try to conform to. So together, these things can be, if these are solved well, the states can actually show a very impressive climb up the Investor Friendliness Index. Yes.
All right. Thank you so very much, Shobhmaya, for having joined us and shared your views on the topic. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
You were listening to a discussion on Niti Aayog Investment Friendliness Index 2026, Enhancing Competitive Federalism and Investment Across States. The participants were Shobhmaya Bhattacharya, Economic Analyst, and Nishit Kumar, Anchor. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 928-909-4044.
Spotlight.